Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
O'clock hours here. We'll get to some NBA, some college basketball. About 30 with Curtis Terry, former Running Rebel player. Want to remind you that you can get all of this radio action up on our LV Sports Network app. We've got four stations, including the newly branded VSiN The Game, so 24/7 sports gambling talk. Our hockey station, Fox 1340, Fox Sports Las Vegas, Raider Nation Radio 920, and of course ESPN 1100. You can listen to on the app, the LV Sports Network app. You can listen to Cofield and Company there. Check out the Best of Cofield and Company audio page for interviews, and then find all of our YouTube videos. And Griffin is doing a good job putting up a bunch of shorts, so they're all up there, linked up to that page as well. Exciting stuff, Danny.
It's a great app. I use it all the time.
Excellent. I got you a little confused when we were doing some rankings.
Yes.
Last hour. We were talking about the CBS Sports head coaching hire grades. Mm-hmm. I did a little different list. I just looked ahead to year three for all these guys and said, which one of them is going to have the most wins? Which team is going to have the most wins?
And year three.
And year three. Not combined, just year three, right? That's enough time to build. Which of these guys could have like a 10, 11, 12 win season? And my rankings were Kellen Moore Saints, Pete Carroll Raiders, Liam Cohen Jaguars, Mike Vrabel Patriots, BJ and the Bears are in fifth, Aaron Glenn and the Jets sixth, Little Shoddy could have the worst record. I also put an asterisk because I don't think he'll make it to year three. Where am I wrong? All over the place?
I would put Ben Johnson quite higher. Because I know he plays in a tough division, or he coaches in a tough division with the NFC North. You got to battle the kneecap eaters, and you got to battle the Vikings and the Packers. But I still think with that team, and especially once Caleb Williams gets going, he had a good rookie year. But I think they're still going to be a 10-win team, 11-win team year after year.
I have the Raiders and Pete Carroll as the second best chance in year three at the most wins. Others don't think Pete Carroll will make it to the third year, like Greg Salerno. Am I wrong on the Raiders? Can the Raiders not be a 10 or 11 win team in year three of Pete Carroll?
My biggest question mark, as is most people's, is what's going on with quarterback. Because, I mean, if they don't go quarterback in the draft, then they're probably pulling from free agency, and will that quarterback be here in 3 years? That's the biggest question mark, is what do they do in this draft?
Let's bring in RJ Clifford, Fight Expert, Autumn Windbags Podcast. RJ, how was the World Traveler Act you just went through with trips to what, Saudi and Australia and where else?
Just those two. That was enough for me. talk about polar opposites. You got a strict Muslim country in Saudi Arabia, and then you go to Sydney, Australia. And I got to say, probably the most unique law I've ever come across internationally is, and this is a true story, on the beaches in Sydney, Australia, it is Australian law that if you're a woman, you have to wear a G-string. Believe, I'm not lying.
Research crew, look this up. I think he's...
Yeah, on a work computer, look up Australia G-string women.
Yes.
And tell me what you say. It's Australia's absolutely gorgeous. It's basically what California could be, minus crime, homeless, and trash.
Okay.
But other than that, it's basically... And friendly people. It's
was that a sneaky... Allegation's not the right word. Sneaky view that every lady, regardless of tuka size, wears a G-string. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying every single woman, and there wasn't a bad tuka size.
Oh, nice.
At the beaches we went to. Awesome. I'll tell you this much, Cofield. I never thank God more for my 20/20 vision, even at 41 years old, than on those beaches.
I didn't know that was a rep.
Beach. It's
I figured that was more of a Brazil thing.
I don't know why. Like, I guess it's the best kept secret, right? That good. It's just that. And again, I'm at some pretty nice, you know, nice beaches in Sydney, like the Bondi and Manly Beach, like the big touristy, like the spots where you would see that. But I couldn't believe it. Like, it was just sunglasses, and I'll leave it at that.
Please tell me you did not respond by trying to match with your bathing suit. No one wants to see that.
No. And that's the other good part too, is normally when you go to like a European or Brazilian beach, the men are in Speedos.
Yeah.
If the women are in G-strings, this was a perfect, just like, hey, normal length board short on the dudes and then the G-strings on the girls. It was just meant to be.
Our conversation coming in was mentioning, it's something I've mentioned all week. I was ranking the head coaching hires, and let's give them time around the NFL. There were seven of them. Which organization will have a season in year three that will be the best in terms of wins? I had Pete Carroll having the second best chance. But then Danny asked the key question, who's at quarterback at that point? Just in general, do you believe in Pete Carroll that the Raiders can be a 9, 10, or 11 win team in year three?
Absolutely. 100%. But I think I think with the Raiders, it's the most unique situation where just coach doesn't fill in all the blanks. You've got new ownership now that have influxed a ton of money. You have Tom Brady that, depending on who you ask, is pulling strings at whatever strength. I think he makes whatever decision he wants. I think he's the czar of football at the Raiders. And from quarterback choice to the color of the curtains, it's his call. Mark Davis has given him that call. And we have a new Mark Davis now. $6 million on an offensive coordinator in Chip Kelly. Highest paid coordinator in football. Like, Mark Davis has made it abundantly clear. Like, yeah, sorry, Raider Nation. I have failed you for years. Those days are over. I can't guarantee you that everything I do is going to be perfect, but I will empty the coffers and just hand out bags of gold bullion to anybody that I think could make the Raiders better. And that's what he's done. And that's all, as a fan base, we can ask of an owner. So when you say, like, will Pete Carroll get to 10 wins in 3 years? Yes, but I think it's Pete Carroll, Patrick Graham, Chip Kelly, Tom Brady, a generous Mark Davis. I think that combination gets Raider Nation where they want to be.
One of my arguments for them potentially not getting there is the fact that it all depends on what they do in this draft, because if they don't get a quarterback and decide to go the free agency route, depending on who they get, would that free agent still be here in 3 years?
I would say that the Raiders are probably the leading candidate to get Sam Darnold if and when he becomes a free agent. And he's 29, so the answer should be yes if that pans it out. I think the Raiders overnight have become, I think, a destination for a quarterback's a little too generous, but I don't think passing to Brock Bowers and having Chip Kelly as your OC is... And you've got, you know, the third biggest, third most equity in the draft. You have the second most cap space. I mean, you can go buck wild on the O-line to give you a great O-line. I think this is a great place for a quarterback who wants to rejuvenate his career. And I said before, you know, I've been saying this whole time before we got our head coach and offensive coordinator. It's like, well, what quarterback do you want? It's like, well, it depends on the OC, right? If we got Ben Johnson, we could take kind of any of these younger kind of send-off guys and maybe make something out of them. He's certainly proven he can do that. I think Chip Kelly's not, doesn't have quite that same resume, but you get just an athletic running quarterback. Like, who's to say you can't make Justin Fields a very competent, run a really good offense type guy. So I think with all the options that we have and the destination it's become, I think the weight on a quarterback is not as heavy as it's been for the Raiders for a while.
See, and I'm glad you said Sam Darnold, because for the last, I don't know, month or so, maybe not that long, 3 weeks, I've been making the case for Sam Darnold should come here. The Raiders should go get him. Now, the money, I don't know what they would offer him, but after the season he just had, yeah, it didn't end the greatest, but he proved that he could win, so they kind of got to pay him a decent amount, and I've been saying that he should come to Las Vegas, and people say otherwise. Because of his history, not the current.
Well, look, I mean, there's any quarterback that's available is available for a reason. So you know, you're not going to get a perfect one. It's like, some of my listeners are just like, well, you always want these old retreads. Why are you just like grabbing guys that were tossed away from on the side? It's like, well, because Josh Allen isn't just running around the streets on free agency. Sorry. Like, it's just not happening. Right. And we're sixth. It's not a very top heavy draft. I love this draft class as far as getting a project quarterback in like rounds 2 through 4. I think it's a really good draft for that. But as far as, you know, like last year when 6 guys went in the first half of the first round, it's, you know, there's Pamela Anderson drafts that are top heavy and there's Jennifer Lopez drafts that are mid heavy. And this is a very Jennifer Lopez draft. So, and it's nice that we got 2/3 so they could take advantage of that. So, look, if Shador falls to 6, which I think the Athletic in their mock draft, he did, I don't buy it, but there's people smarter than me that says that's an option. Wonderful. Fantastic. If not, give me Sam Darnold all day long. And in this free agency class and how much quarterbacks cost and how hard they're going to getting Sam Darnold, we got a ton of cap space. We don't have to give up draft picks for him. That's about as good as you can ask for.
Auto Windbags podcast. RJ Clifford is with us. He does that with, I don't know, what do we call him? How do we describe him? Is he happy right now? Is Juan good or not? What's going
he's
on?
He's never happy.
Okay.
He's never happy.
He's very gripey. He's kind of the heavy on the show. He's a gripey
one. Yeah, you know this very well, Cofield. As a co-host of mine, you're really never happy. So he's kind of stuck in that situation.
I've been talking about Aaron Rodgers. I know Cowherd's really went to bat today for Aaron Rodgers. To the Raiders, where you can bet this offshore. Rodgers to the Raiders is a top 5 choice of destinations on that odds board. Would you be open to that?
I'm open. Obviously, it's got the wild swings. I think Pete Carroll runs a pretty tight ship. And so to have someone like Aaron Rodgers, you're going to need to make sure that you're not pushed around.
Yep.
And between Tom Brady pulling strings and Pete Carroll's history as being a head coach that doesn't get pushed around, I think they can kind of, I don't know if muzzle's the right word on Aaron Rodgers, but they can kind of keep him under wraps a little bit. And he's got that pissed off factor where the Jets told him to kick rocks. We don't want you. Hey, you can't go on Pat McAfee. We're going to make all these rules to make you break up with us. I think he's upset about that. And I think he can find a second wind. And I'm not exactly sure in the cap situation, but I think the Jets will be paying basically his whole salary next season. So get him for cheap. And if it doesn't, for a 1-year rental, if it doesn't work out, kick him to the curb. Costs almost nothing.
If you're Brady, do you tell Rodgers, some of the same rules exist. No McAfee show if you're on the Raiders.
No, you let him do McAfee.
Come on.
Can
you want to be buttoned up or not?
Can they? It's hypocritical.
What do you mean?
No,
if a part owner and the head coach both have side jobs, that's a little hypocritical that he can't do a 20-minute spot.
He can only do shows on Fox because that's where Tom Brady
Well, the difference is, for Brady, I'm the boss. You're not. You're not doing McAfee. No leaks, none of your little cryptic messages, none of your feelings. Cut it out. Play quarterback or else.
Did they really think that was that big of a deal? Did Aaron Glenn really think doing Pat McAfee was the problem, or he was just trying to get Aaron Rodgers to quit? I think it was more of that.
I think it's number two, and I also think in getting him to quit, it sends a message. They clearly leaked that to Rossini to get the message out there that it's a new ball game with the Jets. And it kind of has to be because, you know, and really that's why I make a strong case. I will make a strong case for the Raiders. You know, a lot of that dysfunction happens because there's just too many voices in the room. And now you can be out there in public doing all these interviews. Like, just can we just play football, please?
Just shut up and dribble. Right, Cofield?
That's exactly what I'm – same exact thing, RJ.
No. I'm messing with you. But look, I think there's – that locker room is disgruntled enough where you look like the good guy if you're Aaron Glenn – kicking Rodgers to the curb. Like, you're telling the rest of the locker room, hey, no one's bigger than us. No one's bigger than the team. Yep. The name on the front's bigger than the name on the back, and I'm proving it to you, which he kind of has to do. The Raiders don't have to do that. Like, they could say, like, we're going to roll the dice on this guy. We'll barely have to pay him. Like, we don't have to give up first-round picks. We're not going to have to bring Devontae Adams over here. We're not going to have to, you know, break the bank with paying him. We can just rent him for a year and kick him to the curb after the preseason if he becomes a cancer and isn't good.
We'll compromise. Rodgers will let you do the JT the Brick Show and the Autumn Windbags podcast every week. That's it. Those are the exclusives. All right, I got to get to some fighting. RJ Clifford does a lot of radio and has done it for a long time with SiriusXM's Fight Nation. All right, first of all, your reaction to what Team Canelo did to Team Paul, which seems like the absolute most effective work of just suckering them into thinking they were getting a fight. And meanwhile, Canelo was just using his leverage for a better four-fight deal with Turki Alsheikh.
How about, like, a borderline number one pound for pound fighter for the last 10 years, out Jake Pauling Jake Paul. Like beating him at his own game. The ultimate troll, Jake Paul, teasing that he's going to box Logan Paul for like a day, but really it's just a reality show. Jake Paul just trying to like undercut everyone and just try to get those clicks, try to get those views, try to cause a sensation. And Canelo does basically the same thing, but with actual equity involved. It's like, I'm going to play you, make you look like a fool, make you think Jake Paul, YouTuber, Disney Channel, is going to box me, Canelo, the ultimate competitor, the rare, maybe the only boxer of the last 10 years that could handpick any opponent he wanted and still made sure he fought tough fights just because that's just who he is as a person, embarrassing him and then leveraging him for a better deal. Like, it was just chef's kiss from how it was executed to who he did it to what he got out of it. The guy is just, it's just chestnut checkers in every facet of the fight game with that guy.
RJ Clifford's on Cofield and Company. Pretty interesting comments by Dana White. Not surprising. His actions kind of speak to this direction, but in this case, kind of throwing the threats out there out loud, saying, you know, there's going to be a day there is no media ringside, and we're just going to have all content creators. I will call those partners doing the reporting on us. I don't think it'll happen completely, but I think it'll be pretty limited with traditional media people ringside, and they will welcome in content creators left and right.
Look, I say this all the time. It isn't Dana White's job to make sure he's covered fairly by the media. Like, obviously, this would be bad. It would be outrageous. I think whatever TV, that they're the new TV deal is going to be up this year. So whoever their partner is may have a say in that. Any other side business deals, they may say, like, look, like traditional stick and ball sports, you need to be able to let, you know, actual media in. So we'll see what that conversation's like. But again, like, it's Dana White always like comes down all the time, and you were, I believe, one of the targets of this Cofield years ago. And Dana's like, the media doesn't promote the UFC. We're trying to build a business. We're trying to grow the sport, and the media is not doing that. It's like, that's not the media's job. The media's job is to cover you objectively. Same thing on the flip side. Dana White's job isn't to make sure he's covered fairly. He wants to be covered not fairly. He wants it all to be just promotion. That's literally his job as a fight promoter. And so it's the media's job to try to strike that balance. So, look, that's Dana White's going to do what's best for the bottom line of the UFC. And if that's what he thinks it's going to be, then maybe it will. I'm with you. I don't think it'll happen, but I think it's important enough to remember. Like, it's not Dana's job to make sure there's journalistic integrity.
Well, and, you know, the problem is they didn't get real good, fair treatment early on. So I think they grew calluses when it came to the media. And they're like,
screw it, man. Post-traumatic stress.
You guys didn't treat us the right way and weren't fair. And I'm not saying us, because believe me, we jumped on board very early because I recognize it's going to be a cool sport to cover. You were in very early, but traditional media turned their nose up and were real jerks about it. So they got a thick skin now. They're like, hey, we did it without you. We don't need you moving forward. And now there's a whole other area of content creators. I will say the dangerous part is sports and organizations do need some checks and balances. Every once in a while, someone from the outside has to say, hey, this is wrong. And I'll give you a prime example. If right now, over the next year, right, someone is going really hard from traditional media at Dana White and UFC for keeping around Bryce Mitchell, who is a Adolf Hitler sympathizer, that person will probably be banned. But what they're doing by keeping him around, I think, is really, really dangerous and sends a bad message. And it really doesn't fall under freedom of speech, as Dana White is saying.
Yeah, I mean, freedom, like, look, it's... Freedom of speech means the government can't come down on you for something you say. That has nothing to do with a business or a fighter or a, you know, employee relationship. I'm not trying to sound like, oh yeah, I don't want the UFC or mixed martial arts covered objectively by journalists. And they should say, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, I think the fans and I think the viewers and the public will decide coverage. If there is a demand from UFC fans for objective coverage, Dana will acquiesce. If there is a demand for more social media presences and content creator partners, Dana White will acquiesce. I think it's more up to the fan base to say, like, this is what we want. We want this proper coverage. We demand to know. We want some more transparency and these other things like that. So I don't want to say it's the responsibility of fans. Like, fans, like, they don't want to, like... Watching sports shouldn't be homework, right? It should just be fun and enjoyable. But if there's a demand for, like, if the UFC does that, right? Mark my words. Like, without a shadow of a doubt, there will be this entire new genre of objective journalism that's going to fill that vacuum. And they'll be looked as martyrs. They'll have righteousness on their side. All those things. So I think Dana White might backfire him if he actually executes this plan of his that he's hypothesizing, where he just completely eliminates true media at events.
The other thing is, to cover them objectively and call out important stories, you don't have to be there. So we can do it without being, you know, cage side to cover events. This last event in Australia, I was befuddled. I see this happen too often, and maybe this is where UFC is kind of reaching boxing with compensation, where I see too often guys get a second chance after being really pissed off at the first chance and a loss. And in the case of Sean Strickland, where were the adjustments? Where was a different fight plan? And even his manager called him out, right? Didn't a manager call him out and go, like, where was the sense of urgency and adjustments?
Yeah, it was his coach, Eric Nixick, okay, based out of Extreme Couture right there in Las Vegas. So to answer your first question, the first fight, so this was obviously a rematch with the champion, Dricus du Plessis. Their first fight was a razor close split decision. If you, I thought Dricus won, but if you made a case that Sean Strickland won, I could buy it. It was that close. And so they did have a history where I think a rematch was warranted. Sean Strickland has done the UFC giant favors in the past. Before Alex Pereira was the champion, he was ducked by everybody. Sean Strickland said, sure, I'll do it. Nasruddin Imavov on a 2-fight losing streak. Sean Strickland said, sure, I'll do it. He's been that guy, right? And fairly, like, he's kind of clearly the number one contender. Khamzat Chimaev has potentially we don't know his issues with a visa and how that's going to work moving forward. That's kind of a gray area that I don't know what the answer is. It's not like Sean Strickland was just pulled out of the, you know, outside the top 10 just to do this, right? I mean, he was within striking distance, pardon the pun, for another shot at Rodriguez, and plus their history. To answer your second question, isn't that Sean Strickland to a T?
Yep.
He just doesn't adjust. He fights one way. He has one style. There may not be another top 10 fighter in mixed martial arts in the world, any weight class, man or woman, that has just one style and doesn't adjust for anybody. And if you have a style that doesn't work well against, like Israel Adesanya, like he 49-45 Israel Adesanya, 49-46 Israel Adesanya, because he had a style that did it. But he did the exact same thing to Alex Pereira and got knocked out in 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Like, it is, and I think that's probably a lot of the frustration of his coach, Eric Nixick, because when you say, why didn't a fighter make an adjustment, that's mostly on the fighter, but you got to look at the coach as well. And I think I could not think higher of Eric Nixick. If you say, RJ, who's the best coach in mixed martial arts? Is it Eric Nixick? I might say yes. Like, I'd have to have, you know, there's a lot of good coaches. He might be one of those. So I don't know what's going on there. Sean Strickland reacted to Nixick's comments and said he might not be in my corner next time. Like, Strickland sound genuinely hurt. Nixick does deserve the benefit of the doubt. I know I'm going along with this answer, but I think it's important to note. Eric Nixick deserves the benefit of the doubt in these situations. Sean Strickland deserves the opposite. Strickland's been kicked out of like 4 gyms over the course of his career, right? So if there's some animosity or some friction, I'm going to lean on Eric Nixick. And our good friend Ryan McKinnell, who I hosted the show with today, brought up a very good point. He's like, it could be Eric Nixick trying to coach from the podium. It's saying like, hey, calling out Sean Strickland, you got to make some adjustments. If we're going to become champion, right, you got to do this. I've tried everything I could in the gym to get you to do something different and change your game, and it's not working. This is my last ditch effort to try to make you to make those changes. I don't know if that's the case, but I know for beyond a shadow of a doubt that the burden of proof is on Strickland, not on Eric Nixick.
Last one. The UFC hasn't had much interest in doing, you know, working together with other promotions to get fights going. Obviously,
yeah,
you know, Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, that they worked that out, right? Two potential crossover fights, Jake Paul, Conor McGregor, or Usyk against Pereira. Which one can actually work with the UFC going, you know what, we'll take part in this?
I think people got to remember just how big of a fight Mayweather-Conor was.
Okay.
I mean, literally the second biggest pay-per-view ever, just behind Mayweather-Pacquiao, and not by much. It was number two, not by a whole lot. And so the only reason that fight happened is because the pie was so big that it was worth it for every promoter, every fighter, every manager, every person with their hand in the cookie jar. It was big enough to do that. None of these fights are even close. Not even, there's not a single fight between anybody.
Jake Paul McGregor couldn't be a big money fight?
Jake Paul hasn't, like, the max pay-per-view buys of Mayweather are not a pimple on the butt. Or like, okay. Like Jake Paul is not even close to what Mayweather's done. Not even remotely close. And people forget, like, how, like, Conor McGregor was a two-division champion at the time. You remember at Cofield, there were swarms of fans that thought Conor had a chance. Like, that were like, no, he's good. He can pull this off. That left hand. Oh, Floyd versus Southpaws. Like, there was actual semi-intelligent people that thought the greatest defensive boxer of my generation, the best boxer in the world, would lose to Conor McGregor, a mixed martial artist. Yeah. And that was part of it. There was intrigue. There was an actual X's and O's conversation about that fight with Jake Paul versus anybody. There isn't. And again, like, me versus Conor McGregor sells a million pay-per-view buys. Me versus Floyd Mayweather sells a million pay-per-view buys. Jake Paul hasn't done it once, even with Nate Diaz, who's been a million buy pay-per-view guy. He couldn't get even close to those numbers. So the money talks, and the money's just not there with any other star anywhere right now.
Last 30 seconds, I saw McGregor post his new girl band. Will, as we were calling him earlier, will Conor McDiddy make a transition to the music world and hopefully not act like Diddy away from the cage and the ring and the studio?
I wonder if Conor has a side bet with some of his buddies where it's like, how many things other than fighting can I do in a row and have people still think I'm going to come back?
Right.
Like, can I do 100 different things? Can I become an astronaut? Can I become a horse jockey? Can I start a girl band? How many things can I do besides actually fight? And he's getting pretty close. Like, whatever the over is, he's like making damn sure that he's going to beat that over.
Autumn Windbags Podcast, SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 159. There's too many. You guys, Sirius changes the channels too much. 159. No.
160.
Say it again.
156.
Damn it. It's the gambling channels that are 158 and 159 now. I can't keep track. And yet I find you on the dial and I listen to you guys. So somehow it works. That's what programming the radio does. RJ, you're a wonderful human being. I hope you're not all jet lagged. What an adventure. We'll get into Saudi Arabia and Australia and beyond the butt floss down the road, okay?
Can't wait.
By the way, the butt floss was not a reference at all to Saudi Arabia. We know that. So we come back. I will shut up. CT's in, some college basketball, some NBA. All
on the lights. Former UNLV Rebel and host of the Uncommon Terry podcast, Curtis Terry joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
A lot of important stuff to get to with Curtis Terry. Some Luka talk, as he was at the Jazz game last night against the Lakers. Utah smashes Luka and LeBron. But before that, Curtis, I got to loop you in on a convo we're having earlier. If the show The Bachelor had to pick between you and Paul Pierce as The Bachelor, who do they take?
That's really a question, Steve. I think that's a no-brainer. I may not be a 12-time All-Star or whatever it is, or All-NBA guy, but I think I'm more of a looker than the truth is, just being honest.
Griffin, you're going to sit there in silence? You were raving about Curtis like 45 minutes ago off the air.
Yeah, I was just saying, you know, Paul Pierce, if he looked a little bit like Curtis Terry, maybe he'd have a chance. But
there we go, yeah!
It ain't in the shop of the truth.
There we go. All right. Let's go, Danny. Fire away. You were bad-mouthing Luka.
So, Curtis, if I'm not mistaken, you are a Lakers fan, correct?
Oh, no.
No?
No, not at all. Not at all, Danny. No, not by the closest.
Uh-oh. All right, I'm wrong. My apologies. Sincerest apologies. Anyways, moving past that like I never said it. Long term, how do you think this is going to go for the Lakers? Do you think, obviously, Luka hasn't had the games that we're used to seeing from him. He's in a new place. He's learning new teams, players, how they all play. How do you think this is going to go with him and the Lakers moving forward?
I mean, honestly, I think it's a long-term play. Obviously, I think Luka came out after last night's game and said that he's kind of rusty. He's still trying to get some of the rust off because he's been out since Christmas Day with the calf injury, trying to get himself back into his playing shape. Not what Nico Harrison's definition of his playing shape is. But I think he's going to be okay, and I think this year they're going to try to piece it together. They obviously don't have the pieces that they want in terms of the trade not going through or getting rescinded with the Hornets. They don't get the big that they coveted. They signed Alex Len instead, and they waived former runner Rebel Chris Wood. So I think they're trying to piece it together. They don't have the shooters that they definitely need to surround Luka and LeBron with, which everybody knows is the blueprint for those two types of ball-dominant, heavy, aggressive, facilitating scorers. But I think it's a long-term play, and I said this with Steve the other day. I think they get him, they give up AD, they get a younger, top-five, perennial, all-star, future MVP of the league in the face of the league with Luka. And if LeBron doesn't decide to retire in a year and a half, 2 years, then the next 10 to 12 years for their franchise is set because you've got the next guy. The next Laker great probably will get a statue after LeBron does, and then he'll probably be the next guy in terms of Luka Doncic. But I think they're not quite there yet, and this only being their second game together last night, they're trying to figure it out clearly, but they're not quite there. But I think it's going to be a better long-term play as opposed to short-term in the present. I think they'll figure it out this year, but I don't think they're going to get to the heights that they'll get to in the years to come.
The excuse of his cardio is completely blown out of the water, right? Like, that's ridiculous.
I think so. I mean, I look at it this way. He's probably not in – he might be in a little worse shape now than he was last year in the playoffs because he sat out since Christmas Day. But at the same time, if you're saying he has a history of this, so last year when he went on that outrageous, insane playoff run and single-handedly basically led you to the NBA Finals, if that's out-of-shape Luka, I'll take out-of-shape Luka any day of the week, put him on my team, because he's a top-five player in the league. So if that's out-of-shape, that's great. I think right now he'll be more motivated. There's more eyes on him in the bigger market in L.A., in Hollywood. I think he's going to be fine, and he's proven that he's this type of player, and he's been doing it since he's been 15, 16 years old over in the EuroLeague. So I've got no concerns about him, and I think it's probably a blessing in disguise for him to go somewhere else to where he's truly coveted, and he's really going to shine even brighter in Hollywood now than he would have done in North Texas.
What'd you think of Bronny last night?
Oh, boy. Steve knows how I feel about this. But so the place was sold out. The ticket resale values were through the roof. I mean, they had lower-level seats, one for $1,300, and that wasn't sitting courtside. And so tickets were a pain even for us to get, and my brother being on staff. But this place was raving. It was full before they came out. They were cheering for Luka and LeBron. The starting lineups, LeBron got a loud ovation. Luka got the loudest out of everybody on both teams. Bronny got a great ovation when he came in, and every time he touched it for the last 6.5 minutes, because they were down by 20, he was getting shooting cheers, and everybody just being boisterous. And then he hits one move, a step back, knocks down a jumper, gets another layup, hits another jumper. I mean, next thing you know, he's got 9 points, and that started with 2 free throws initially. But Bronny played good. Obviously, set his career high. He looked the part last night, but nonetheless, I think it's good for him. And I'm not going to bash the kid. I think he's in a really tough spot. It's almost a lose-lose for him, unless some outrageous things happen. But I think you got to take the opportunity you're given and run with him. Last night, he definitely made up for the opportunity he had in Philly a couple weeks ago, because he definitely doubled down and put up 9 points and looked really good in his 7.5-minute stretch last night.
All right, switching gears here, we'll go. We're going to go local to the Rebels. Obviously, they didn't play well to end January and the start of February. However, they have won 2 straight and a crushing win over Air Force the other night. What do you see in their turnaround over these last 2 games as opposed to what they were doing in the previous 5 games?
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody would doubt that I'm probably the biggest critic on the Rebels, and I think that's deserved to be so. I played for them. I was in those guys' shoes, and now calling the games and being close to them. I just want nothing for the best for them, and I understand what it takes. I know they can do it, and they've shown it to us on the course of the season. And I think in terms of what they did the last 2 games, they've been able to finish games and make enough 50-50 plays to put themselves in a position to win, which in those five prior in that losing streak, they weren't able to do so. And you lose 5 games by a combined 24 points, and a lot of them are last possession games. But I think they're putting themselves in a spot to be able to have some success down the stretch. Obviously, when you beat Wyoming, who barely loses by 4, I believe, last night in the pit and led most of the game, then you blow out Air Force, and then now you're going on the road to Fresno on Saturday, and you got a week off, and then you've got the home stretch and the sprint on the last lap of the race. And I think they're going to be in a spot to be able to pick up some games. I think right now they're only 2.5 back out of third place, which sounds crazy, but right now for them, the fact that they're above Reno in the standings, that's what you want to do. Make sure you avoid that 7 or lower, because then you don't play on that first Wednesday of the conference tournament. I think this team has a chance to shock some people the last couple weeks, but they're going to have to be able to knock down shots like they did with Julian Erskine. Jalen Bedford's going to have knockdown shots. Baron Cherry's going to have to be a force in the paint, and Dedon's going to have to be DJ and do what he does as a point guard. I think they got a chance, and I think at this stage of the season, a lot of teams are going to start beating each other up like they do historically in the Mountain West. So I like their chances, but they've got to play full team ball, play defense, and just leave it all in the court because they really got nothing to lose where everybody else above them has everything to lose in terms of a possible bid or out-large bid the NCAA tournament.
That Fresno game is 4 o'clock on Saturday. You got to see him up close once. How good is former Rebel Verbal Zion Collins?
You know, I mean, he's an animal and a pest when it comes to guarding the ball in the backcourt. Obviously, he's a really fast guard with the ball in his hands. He can create. He can facilitate. I think he's better with the more talent he has around him. They've obviously had some struggles this year, haven't won a lot of games. Matt Neverett, my broadcast partner, mentioned that they play one of the top 10 paces in the country in terms of getting the ball up and down the court and how many possessions they get in the ball game. And so they're a team that you can't take lightly. They gave the Rebels struggles in the tail end of the game in early January. And so I think anything can happen. But I think they're in a position with under the new coach to where they've got nothing to lose in terms of what do they really have to lose. They're going out there, they're going to play some ball and play hard. But I think Zion's the guy that's going to be motivated, and we've seen what he can do, and he feels like he's been slighted, rightfully or wrongfully slow in terms of opportunities. But I think you got to go in there and try to win. And the Rebels have played some close games in there in the past. But they're going to have to make sure they come out and try to get it done because they're in a position right now where they need every game versus teams that are below them, and then they got to pick off some teams ahead of them to get back in the mix.
I like what Vance Wahlberg is doing in terms of the build. Very little patience if everyone's not on board. And he had a guy who was averaging like 18 points a game in Aguilard and also in Michael Robinson, a 10-6 guy, and he basically didn't think they were cohesive and with the team, so he told both of them, hit the bricks.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes I think that's okay. Like my first year under Coach Lon Kruger, I remember during practice in the fall, he got rid of a player, and he got rid of another player right when the season started, or at Christmas break, I apologize. Then my senior year, he got rid of another guy after the first game of the season. And I think it's about when you're trying to build a program and then sustain a program, you have to have guys that are there that are selfless, that want to be a part of it, that are going to sacrifice. And any small thing, and everybody knows in team sports, any one guy that's a defector or detractor, they can doom your whole program. And so I think in that kind of case, Coach Wahlberg in Fresno knows he's behind the eight ball in this one in terms of what he's got to do to be able to win and be successful with all the other established programs in the Mountain West. But he's going to have to do what he needs to do and what he believes in. And ultimately, and I've said this a long time, as a coach, as a leader in people, you have to know what your mission is and what you want to achieve and go after it. And if you're wrong, you're wrong. But you can't waver once you start down that path. And so far, it seems like he knows what he wants to achieve, and they're going to attack it from that standpoint. I think more power to him. And you're either on with him or you're not. It's his way or the highway. It seems like a lot of those guys are taking the highway out of Fresno.
Curtis, we appreciate it. Make sure next 2 days jot down a few more bear-isms because we need those during the games.
Gotcha. We'll see you guys soon. We'll see you on Saturday.
There you go. Curtis Terry. He loves bear cherry. Whether it's the honey pot or the bear paw, or I think he was going to start doing Yogi and Boo Boo. Anytime bear cherry does well, he gets super giddy. And then unfortunately, I egg him on across the court in my sideline role by laughing. And it just, the whole thing's a mess, but it's fun. Let's give away some tickets to see Hardy on May 23rd, T-Mobile. These are two tickets to the show before you can buy them. 364-1100. Caller 7-364-1100. You can buy them tomorrow at 10 a.m. at AXS.com. But two tickets to see Hardy on May 23rd at T-Mobile, 364-1100.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Don't forget, never too early to book your spot at Circa Las Vegas for their Three Stories of Glory tournament viewing party. Mega March is on the way. You know, Circa Sports has the three-story sportsbook, 78 million pixel HD screen, the creature comforts of home, but out and about, luxury with the in-seat power outlets, free Wi-Fi, food and beverage packs are available and more, but got to reserve your spot because that place gets jam-packed and you're going to have different opportunities all around the property. CircleLasVegas.com/MegaMarch. In the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Lady Rebels, nice job this week. Taking care of business against San Diego State. They had lost to SDSU earlier. They're now 12-1 in the Mountain West Conference. Kiara Jackson had 27 points and 9 assists. Wyoming could be the team that's in the way come Mountain West Conference tournament time. They're 9-3. Interesting. I think they have a weapon that's tough to cover, and Desi Ray of year past, right? She was around forever. She scared the hell out of Allison Fertig, who's 6'4 and 229. Her last game was 30 points and 15 rebounds against Air Force. She's a beast. She's tough.
Sounds like it.
Last regular season game is up in Wyoming on March 4th. If you are sitting at one loss and Wyoming has three, they have no shot at first place, what do? You just treat it as a tune-up, or do you roll out and try to finish the year at 19-1 in conference, or do you rest?
It's a double-edged sword, right?
You don't want to get anyone hurt, but I also know it's not really in Lindy LaRocque's nature.
Exactly.
Be like, yeah, we'll take the L.
Do you play – if somebody normally plays 33 minutes, do you play them 25?
I don't know.
Give them a little bit of rest, but also try to be competitive in the game?
I would get – Coach LaRocque on to ask her about this, but I think I would get, we're not there yet. Stop looking ahead. Jerk.
Right. Oh,
she
yes.
wouldn't say jerk, but she would, like, her tone would suggest.
Maybe.
Jerk. Especially if it's Willie asking. Back in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
We're having fun, Willie. Okay, so what is going to be the outcome of what I talked about at the beginning of the show? Did we get an outcome? Can we check? YouTube TV Paramount Search, vast research company, or behind the scenes office. We have a research office. What's going to happen? YouTube against Paramount right now. Tomorrow, I think it begins, CBS and everything connected to it, CBS Sports Network. March Madness would go bye-bye because YouTube and Paramount can't play nice. What's going to happen?
They're going to get it resolved.
I don't know. It carries all the way through the tournament. Now, you know, one of my motives is I canceled YouTube TV today because I got so pissed off. So I'd be like, I nailed it.
No, I think it's probably going to be last-minute thing, like Selection Sunday. They're going to get it done. But I think they get it sorted. They know how big this is. They're going to get it done.
Back in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
I just mentioned this because this is my baseball man crush. Joey Gallo was without a major league contract, so he signed a minor league deal with the White Sox. Las Vegas.
Former National.
208 home runs. You loved him with the Nationals?
I don't know about that.
He's not hitting to contact.
No.
Is a good way to put it. I wish he was, but last year he hit 161.
And he was hurt for a while, too. Had a lot of strikeout issues. It was bad.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Okay. We need to recap what happened in New Orleans, good and bad.
Okay.
We went for Media Row. What's wrong? Don't snicker in the background. First of all, you'd never been there, right?
New Orleans? No. It was always a bucket list city for me. Okay. It still is, because I want to take my fiance.
Oh!
So we're going to go.
Those are good returns.
Yes.
So you liked it.
We're very much in, like, the spooky scene, so we want to go back, do some haunted ghost tours, some cemetery viewings, and I want to take her to the voodoo shops and things
Vampire
like that.
Vampire Cafe, as I suggested. Yep. I think you're going to like that one. Boy, Miles Simmons came on. What an old, crusty dude he is. But I also think he may have been leading towards something else, which we'll have to explore. He kept saying he didn't like the South. So there may be something more to that one. He did not like the food. He did not like sweating.
The sweating was terrible, but I love the food.
I don't want to battle everyone on the humidity, and I'm chubby and I sweat. I didn't feel sweaty there. That's like the nicest time of year. It was 74 degrees.
I don't know
what the humidity was. Really?
Oh, yeah. I couldn't stop. Even in the mornings when we first got to the convention center, I couldn't stop sweating.
The West Coast bod, the desert bod, does adjust to this weather, and then anything that's slightly humid, you sweat like an animal. Did you have a favorite guest?
I'll be honest, I don't think I did. I take that back. Dan Orlovsky. I spent like 5 hours trying to get him, and I got him.
He was good.
And I'm glad I did.
Did you have a favorite restaurant or food item?
It was a place that John, me, and Adam went. I can't remember what it was called. It was one of the nights after the convention.
What'd you have?
I had everything. Alligator.
Oh, you went to Nola Po' Boys.
Yes.
Yeah, you went crazy.
I had alligator bites. I had a po' boy. I ordered like four things.
Where's their favorite kind of mixed shaky drink that blacked us all out because we had like six different kinds?
Yes, it was the Hurricane.
The Hurricane.
Yeah.
I mean, erase, erase. Boss Q Myers, you didn't hear any of this. Danny never drank the whole trip.